Hi, I'm Bob Tabor with www.learnvisualstudio.net, where I teach beginners the skills they need to get their first software development job building Windows and web apps at the world's best companies as quickly as possible. So in the previous lessons, as we've been working our way up to this point, we learned about the data model and how it's used as the data context for pages, and then how that data context flows from the page down to various controls as they're embedded within other child controls inside of other child controls and so on. And when we talk about the data model, we're talking specifically about the sample data source like you see on screen right now. We learned about the binding syntax that's used by XAML to bind the data model that was exposed by the code behind to the declarative controls in our XAML. The Hub App template employs a design pattern in software called MVVM, or rather Model View View Model. At a high level, MVVM seeks to separate concerns, extracting code that's specific to presentation, or rather the view, the XAML that defines the user interface, and extract that from the code that's specific to the domain, or rather the model, or rather the sample data group and the sample data item classes and their relationships. And separate that from the code that coordinates the activities of the model and provides the view with access to the model, which we call the view model, or rather, in this case, the sample data source. So MVVM is a slightly advanced topic, and frankly, I'm not sure that I'm qualified to provide an exhaustive explanation of it. Unfortunately, even some authors and books that have attempted to clarify this topic have not always done a good job of doing it either. But what I can do is I can show you the basics of how and why MVVM is employed in the Hub App template so that you can begin to understand the thought process that influenced the organization and the design of the code inside of the template. Now, obviously, my goal is to help you better make changes to this template, and a fundamental understanding of MVVM should help you to build a mental model of the responsibilities that each class has, is basically a piece of a larger puzzle. All right, so let's start with the notion of a model. In software architecture, a model is a representation of a given business or domain problem. If you were building an accounting system, your model might have classes for things like an account, a customer, credit, debit, and so on. If you're building a game, your model might have classes for things like planet, spaceship, soldier, weapon, and so on. If you're building a media app, your model might have classes for sound or video or categories of sounds and videos and so on. So in most MVVM implementations that I've seen, the model is little more than just a data structure, a class that defines properties and basically contains the state of a given object, but almost no methods to implement business logic. So just to provide a little guidance here, many believe that this is actually an anti-pattern, or rather a bad idea. It's often referred to as anemic domain model, in which business logic is typically implemented in separate classes which transform the state of domain objects. But we're going to ignore that for now. I just wanted to throw that in for what it's worth. So you can see examples of a typical model that utilizes MVVM in our Hub App template, the sample data item and the sample data group classes. They have lots of properties, but they have no methods that actually operate on those properties outside of the constructor, which initializes the state of a given instance of each of these classes. All right. So good examples of the notion of a model. Let's roll all that back up. Okay. The next is the view, and the view has the responsibility of the presentation of the model. It does this through binding, a core component of XAML through the binding syntax that we've already seen. So what does the view bind to exactly? Well, we've seen examples of it binding to data via a view model, which it would call the default view model in the code behind. But later in the series, we're going to see how the view binds to commands that are implemented in the view model as well. Commands are essentially methods that perform logic and respond to the user's interaction with the view. More on that later. So then finally, the view model, the last part of model view view model, is the key to making MVVM work. The view model provides a layer of abstraction between the view and the model. We can see this implemented in our sample data source right here. That's the purpose of that class. It has to load data into instances and collections of the model classes to create an object graph. When I use the term object graph, I'm referring to instances of classes that are somehow related. We see this at work with the get sample data async method. And we've already talked through kind of the pseudocode for what this method does. But once it has sufficiently created that object graph from data in a file and created instances in memory of our sample data group and sample data item objects, there are various ways of returning parts of it based on the needs of a given view. So it's these three methods here, or this public getter for the group's public property. All right. So you might wonder whether the code behind, for example, the hub.page.xaml.cs file for the XAML is part of the view or part of the view model. After all, first it retrieves the appropriate data for the given view in the navigation helper load state method, like we've seen here. And then secondly, exposes the data that's retrieved from the view model as a property to the XAML here in our, the public side of this, the default view model here. All right. So I think of these as merely helpers to the main job of the view. And therefore, I would classify everything here in the hubpage.xaml.cs as part of the view itself, not as part of the view model. All right. So, and I say all that to say this, the view should merely observe the data that's exposed by the view model. In other words, it should watch the collections or the instances of objects that were delivered by the view model for any changes, and then react to those changes by changing what's displayed in the view. And this is called observability. Now we're getting to that observe keyword that I wanted to ignore. We were looking at observable dictionary and observable collection and things of that nature. So if an instance of an object that's part of the collection that's managed by the view model is added or removed or updated, then the view should be notified of that change. Now, fortunately, all this plumbing that's required to make this work is baked right into XAML. But from your perspective as the developer, how do you notify the view that something has changed? Well, in order to make that work, your classes have to implement the iNotifyPropertyChanged interface. So by implementing the iNotifyPropertyChanged interface, your class basically will say, you can observe me, you can watch me, and I'll let you know whenever something inside of me changes. So I don't really have a complete example to show you, but I figure I'd throw something together really quick just to show you how you would go about implementing iNotifyChanged for a given class so that it can be, at that point, observable, and any changes to that class would then bubble up to any view that was observing that particular object. So that if the object changes and if its properties change, then the view will update itself to reflect that change. All right, so what I'll do here in the common folder, and I'll delete this, but if you want to follow along, we can do this. So I'm going to add a new class, and we'll just call this class sample, all right? And we're going to throw this away. This doesn't mean anything, but I'm just going to start typing away here. So I'm going to go class sample, and I will iNotify property changed. And I'm going to hit control period on my keyboard, add the using statement. So add using system.component model. All right. And then I'm going to hit control P period one more time on my keyboard, I'm going to say implement interface iNotify property change. So that control period technique, we learned about that in the C-sharp fundamental series. If you're not familiar with that, please go back and watch that series, okay? So I'm going to go ahead and implement the interface. And now notice what it does. At this point, it merely is implementing an event called property changed event handler called property changed. All right. And so the intent here is that we will fire off an event, and anything that watches that event will be notified whenever a change happens. Okay, now there's one more thing that we're going to need here, and that is a helper method that will essentially fire off this event. And it's the same in every class that you'll create, or basically the same. So I'm just going to paste it in, and we're going to need to add the namespace system.runtime.compilerservices for this caller member name. So as you can see, really the purpose of this is that it's going to throw or fire or trigger off this event called property changed that we've defined here. And anything that's watching the instance of this instance of this class is going to be notified of a change. So now all we need to do is implement some properties. Now we can do something the old-fashioned way, or the newfangled way, I guess you could say, of just doing prop tab tab, and that will allow us to create auto-implemented properties. But in this case, we're going to need to do prop full tab tab, because what I want to do is create a string called name, and then whenever anybody, any of our code changes the name property, we want to say and fire off this property change notification and say, hey, name property just changed. It was Bob and now it's Robert, all right? So in order to do this, we're going to add some code here in the setter. And so we'll do something like this. If value has indeed changed, so if the value is not the same as the current name, then what we want to do is set it like so. And then most importantly for our purpose here is to go notify property change, and we'll pass in the name of the property. In this case, the name of the property is name. All right, great. All right, so by implementing this iProperty changed interface on our class, we must agree to raise an event called property change. This is the fundamental wiring that allows other classes, like the user interface classes in our XAML, to be notified whenever changes to an instance of this class has occurred. So it'll say, hey, now go update yourself to reflect this change that just happened. So this event then is then triggered in the notify property change method, like we saw here just a moment ago, right here. And whenever the set operation is performed, calls that property, triggers that event, and now the event is fired, and any class that's listening to the, for that event, like certain user interface classes in the phone API, they're going to have an opportunity to refresh the data that they display. All right, so having said all of that, the Hub App template doesn't have any classes that directly implement iNotify property change. Like if you were to go and just do a search for this throughout the project, find and say, I want to look throughout the entire solution, with the exception of this particular file, you're not going to find anything that implements it. So how in the world do we have observability when nothing implements iNotify property changed? And the truth of the matter is that whenever we use any of the observable collections, whether it is the built-in observable collection of T, as well as that custom class that we saw, that observable dictionary, it's based on classes that ultimately implement iNotify property changed. So the moral of the story is that as long as we're using some observable collection, whether it be this custom observable dictionary or observable collection or something else, to expose collections of objects from the view model up all the way to the view, then we'll get observability at the collection level. So observable collection of T is essentially a list of T with the added superpower of observability. All right. So there are a couple of important aspects about this. First of all, the sample, let's get back here. Sample data group. There we go. Sample data group has an items property, which is an observable collection of type sample data item. Therefore, whenever new sample data items are added or removed from the items property, the property changed event will be fired by the collection, and any user interface elements that bind to that items collection will be notified that, hey, you've got a new item that you need to render in your view. Now, unfortunately, this is a bit anticlimactic because we don't see this happen in the template as it stands right now. In other words, there's no functionality that requires us to remove items or add items to the collection throughout the course of use. I mean, that's just not what was built into the template, but we'll see this in use later on as we build another example based on the Hub App template. All right. The second important aspect that I want to point out is that if we want observability at the sample data item level, so let's drill into sample data item. As you can see, as it stands right now, it does not implement iNotify property changed. And so if we had functionality in the app as it stands to edit details about a single sample data item, those details would not be reflected in any user interface elements that bind to our collection of sample data items or individual sample data items, because we don't implement it at the property level like I did here in the sample.cs, where I implemented it at the property level. It's implemented at the collection level. Therefore, whenever we make a change or we set or edit a given instance of sample data item and change its title or its subtitle or its description, that notification obviously won't be fired off because we haven't implemented it. So as we move forward and build real applications based on the Hub App template, we'll have to utilize this technique of implementing iNotify property changed on our model classes in order to make observability happen at the property level, at that most minute level, okay? So that's really all I wanted to say. In this lesson, we talked about two very important ideas. Hopefully, you can see the larger role of MVVM and its influence on the Hub App template. I mean, it's what defined how the Hub App template works and how it binds to data, how the code is laid out, and what the responsibilities of each class really are in the larger scheme of things. The design pattern shaped and guided the developers of the template to provide an implementation that separated the concerns of the app and delegate responsibilities to certain classes. So furthermore, hopefully now you understand, at least at a high level, why the Hub App template was using observable collection of T and that custom observable dictionary. It provides a convenient means of updating the user interface controls, giving them the notification to update yourself because something changed fundamentally with this collection of objects that I have. So there are more aspects to MVVM that we're going to cover in this series. I'm going to talk about commands a little bit later on, which allows the user interface to bind to events like a button click to a method in the view model. And it allows us to wire things up without having to get down deep into the details. You can have somebody working only on the user interface and another developer working only on the view model, and they can work on the same project at the same time, because all the user interface developer needs to know is that he needs to bind that button to that command. Okay, so that's one of the tangential benefits of using MVVM, especially for commands. We'll talk about that later. All right, that's all I have to say for now. We'll see you in the next lesson. Thank you.